we interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, second day of April edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Back inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. My name is Ben Love, the bespectacled one. On the other side of the glass, the famous Clint D. And for the next 2 hours, we're ready to rock. LSU, UL, both barreling down on spring football games. Huge topics of conversation today. A minor league football disaster that how could we have ever seen it coming? Yeah, we'll touch on that as well. But I do want to lead today with the Final Four. Perhaps didn't pay just due to Virginia, Auburn, Michigan State, and Texas Tech. Let off yesterday as we needed to, I believe, with LSU. Played taps on their season. It was a remarkable one. 28 wins. Wondered aloud, what's next? Who might the Tigers lose? Who could some of the most influential defections be if those come down the pipe? And here we are on a Tuesday. Not a lot has changed there, but we don't need to harp on it each and every program. When there's news on Will Wade and the rest of the fallout, we'll share it. When I hear anything, I'll share it. But today, let's go in on the four left in Minneapolis. You want to weigh in? We got time. Tell us who you like. Tell us who you don't like. And let us know who rips down the net. 706-0111. The first thing I'll say, the opening line on the two teams playing each other with almost identical jerseys. I hate uniform confusion. Virginia, Auburn, I am flabbergasted that Wahoo Nation is favored by 5.5 points. It feels like disrespect to the way Auburn is playing. Feels like way too much credit, in my opinion, given to Virginia, which had really no earthly business winning that game against Purdue. You give them credit because they did. They had a wacky missed free throw that went across the equator, came back across, and look, they earned it with the degree of difficulty, but Purdue, behind a 40-plus point showing from Carson Edwards, looked like they had that thing in the bag. So Virginia felt like they were on borrowed time, and now they have broken through. And there's a bit of a glass ceiling that I'm having a hard time breaking through when it comes to their program, in a similar way that I had a hard time accepting a few years back that Villanova was truly ready for prime time. I used to have two hard and fast rules when it came to filling out a bracket, up until about 5 years ago. And one of them I still have. You may not like it, because I know that one seeds, well, they're a little bit more vulnerable, right? We saw one lose last year. Two seeds, that happens with a little more regularity. But one of my rules each and every year, I don't even look at who's on the lines. I just pick the one and the two seeds to win their opening game. That's just something I do. I don't screw around with the chances that the 15 seed is a really great mid-major team. I don't care. I play the odds there. But up until 5 years ago, Clint, it was a tried and true axiom for me. I didn't trust the V's. I didn't trust Villanova, and I didn't trust Virginia when it came time for March Madness. Jay Wright, the Villanova Wildcats, not only once but twice now, they have proven that they are amongst the absolute upper crust of college basketball. I guess you could say I'm having a hard time making that mental leap with Tony Bennett and Virginia. And they have pumped out a lot of very, I won't say prolific, but they've pumped out some very reliable pros. to the next level. Malcolm Brogdon with the Bucks stands out to me as being almost the perfect prototype of a Virginia guy at the next level. He's a great glue player on arguably the league's best team, right? He's not the Greek Freak. He's not Chris Middleton, some of the other really good players for the Bucks, but he's a really nice glue piece for them. Virginia's got a lot of glue guys and a coach that wants to keep it tight late and win it at the horn. Not a very comfortable recipe when it comes to the big dance, in my book at least. But for the first time since Tony Bennett has been head coach, they have broken through to the Final Four. Why they are 5.5-point favorites, I have no idea. And so Cousin Dino, if he were with us, he would tell you, throw the shekels on Bruce Pearl and Auburn. That's what I'm going to tell you as well. By the way, Clint, that wasn't an accidental Cousin Dino drop. I'll let this cat out of the bag now. Somehow, some way, Cousin Dino has gotten a credential to go to the Masters next week. Are you kidding me? So we will be having Spread Heads with Cousin Dino live from Augusta.
This is really becoming a tradition like any other. And we have Cousin Dino on to talk about the Masters. I think this is why. Because he was dead on, balls accurate about last year's winner.
He gave us Patrick Reed last year.
Like, during practice rounds.
He gave us Patrick Reed. And so Cousin Dino will be back in the middle of next week live from Augusta. That sounds like a bad joke, but for the second straight year, it's a real thing. I have a hard time getting credentialed for like an STM basketball game. That's a joke, of course. Danny and Kim Broussard are fantastic. But Dino is going to Augusta National. And again, if you were with us, he'd tell you to put it on Auburn. On the other side, and I do believe that this will be the winners half of the bracket, either Michigan State or Texas Tech will beat, in my opinion, more likely Auburn, but whoever advances from the opposing half of the bracket. Michigan State currently going off as a 2.5-point favorite against Texas Tech. This is one of those impossible games to predict for me. Both teams feel like they fit the team of destiny mold. One of them is a more familiar name. But Texas Tech is that program. We see it with teams at the professional level, that franchise. They are that team that keeps getting around further in the playoffs each successive postseason. You see that, don't you? Chris Beard and the Red Raiders got to the Elite Eight last year. They beat a number one in Gonzaga. You know what? Let's give them their full due. They beat a number three in Michigan, and John Beilein's teams usually have a magnet to the Final Four. So they beat a really good number three. They beat a number one, the Zags. Now here they are. They're not going to be scared of anything, and it's a good thing because on the other side, Saturday, is Sparty, and Michigan State, it feels like they have the best lead guard that's left. And a lot of times the big dance, that's what really matters. Think of Kemba Walker. Think of so many guys throughout the years that have been the best point guard on the best team. It's not a surprise that a lot of times that guy and those teams win. Feels like Cassius Winston is the most important player left in the big dance. And that is casting no aspersions upon the stud that Texas Tech has. I know Auburn's got a couple of guys that scored 20-plus in the win over Kentucky. Virginia really doesn't have that name brand player, but they may be the best overall team in terms of kind of how they stick together, which is code for I don't think they're very talented. Yeah, you could probably tell. So I like Auburn a good bit, but I think either Michigan State or Texas Tech beats the other. It's an interesting Final Four. At least three out of the four, I don't think they've got markets that they love. Auburn, Texas Tech, I don't have to explain to you why those aren't great TV markets for the big dance. But out of the other two, you could probably say Virginia, right? Proximity to D.C., so many of the other East Coast cities that they're in relative close proximity to. Virginia is probably your biggest market team left, and even they aren't all that sexy, as I mentioned. As far as Michigan State goes, I'm leaning toward them being my favorite to take it down at this point. But it's going to be an interesting Final Four. We'll have more on it. Try to have some more guests on that cover these teams as beat writers as our week goes on. All right, I mentioned big show today in our very next segment, about 3 or 4 minutes from right now, taking you to Baton Rouge, Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter. What has he seen so far from Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger's offense? And what should fans expect this Saturday from Tiger Stadium in the spring game? Gordy will be our only scheduled guest in hour number one. At 5:05, we begin a double dose of Shea Dixon. Go247.com. First, the recruiting. And LSU just locked in an official visit from the number two running back in the country, a kid from Cali, no less. Shea's going to give you the drop on that. And then Will Wax on the spring game in the flip the script portion of that interview. At 5:45, excited to bring back Jim Harris, executive director of the Raging Cajuns Athletic Foundation. They've got a revamped investment model. What does that mean for Cajun fans? What kind of goodies can you get? And do you get some retroactive love for what you've done since 2009? Jim Harris going to troubleshoot a lot of those questions on a big day for the business side of Vermilion and White Athletics. We're coming right back in. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Cannot believe that we've gotten to the week of LSU's spring game basketball, really. Took us for a loop as far as our usual coverage, but let's get the lowdown right now. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. To Baton Rouge we go. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, our man wears a lot of hats, but right now we'll call him the LSU football sideline reporter. Gordy Rush, welcome back in, Gordy. How are you?
Hey, Ben. Good afternoon.
So people a couple of years ago believed wholesale change was coming to the offense when Matt Canada was named OC. How would you prepare them for what they're going to see with Steve Ensminger and the addition of Joe Brady?
So everything that I have seen this spring has led me to believe that we will see a change. I went and watched Joe Brady speak at the LSU football clinic last Friday, and the passing game is basically the New Orleans Saints passing game. There's a lot of New Orleans Saints principles that they put in play, and I've seen it in my own two eyes, the film that they presented and the things that they turn around and practice on Saturday. There are a lot of similarities to what's going on. That being said, like, I get it. Tiger fans, until they see it, they're not going to believe it, but I think we're headed that direction.
I think one of the biggest differences from what I could perceive would be, I don't know that you're getting apples to apples with Drew Brees, a future Hall of Famer, and Joe Burrow. Even from a skill set standpoint, how could this offense utilize Burrow differently than the Saints do Brees?
Well, I think that Burrow is obviously more of a player in terms of being activated in the run-pass option. Rarely do you see Brees do that. Now, of course, they got there with Taysom Hill a little bit this past season. But I think that's probably the biggest difference. And where Burrow needs to continue to improve is in the accuracy, because the Saints offense, and I think one of the big things that you'll see that we didn't see in what I'll call the first, I guess, ten games of the LSU season. We saw it in the Rice, Texas A&M, and UCF games. Is that the backs and tight ends are always going to be coming out. They like to run a spacing concept. The Saints do, and LSU obviously with Brady, in which you're putting five receivers out in routes. And a lot of times you've got two safety valves, a running back, or maybe a tight end that's some sort of check down, and the ball's coming out quickly. Well, here's the similarity. Burrow ran this type of offense at Ohio State. There's some parallels to what Ohio State did, and I think what the LSU is now running. So I think that's some similarities. He's familiar. What he will be able to bring to the table is he's more of a runner, obviously, than Brees at this point of his career.
LSU football sideline reporter Gordy Rush, our guest on 103.7 The Game, getting ready for the spring game coming up this Saturday. This time last year, Gordy, we know that the receiving core was very young. A couple of freshmen played a lot. What do you expect out of those guys, and what do you see from them that leads you to believe they're taking a step forward?
Well, I obviously, you know, they went through some groin pains a year ago, and they're physically, I think, more, you know, they've grown up with that point. I think they're better getting off the line of scrimmage. And one of the things that's not talked about, Joe Brady played wide receiver in college. He brings a knowledge of that position, and he's continued, I think, with some of the, you know, fundamentals, or at least the getting off the jams, those type of things that Jerry Sullivan started a year ago. That being said, I think one thing that I will say about this offense, especially early earlier in the year, there was a tendency that Justin Jefferson was the more of the target than anything else. This passing game is, there's every once in a while they'll look for some matchups, but anybody's capable of catching the football. And I know you haven't seen stats in the scrimmages, but that's really been the case. They've been more diversified in who they throw the football to, not only within the receiving corps, but tight ends and running backs as well.
On the offensive line, yesterday we had Jamie Howard on the program. He said that's the group to me that absolutely stands out. And you could tell that James Craig has a more experienced group to work with. So I guess what have your two eyes seen in that case?
Yeah, I think the two biggest things that really jump out for me have been the improvement at the offensive tackle. Both Sadiq Charles and Deculus have spent a lot of time in terms of their footwork and doing a better job in pass protection. But you know what really jumps out, and I think it's a stupid point by Jamie, is that the ball in the scheme is coming out. And you think about how many times that Drew Brees it gets hit, and it's rare because the ball is coming out. They've got five receivers out. Defenses are not going to be able to send as many pressure packages because people are going to be forced in coverage. And the scheme is get the football out. There's a check down that's always there. So, yeah, I think improved offensive line, pass blocking skills is something we have seen. I will say that I like Dare Rosenthal and some of the stuff that he's done at the backup left tackle. Traore is better technically than he was a year ago. And so the combination of all of that, I think, is going to improve for better pass blocking.
Another moment or two, we're going to wrap with Gordy Rush on Twitter, at GLRush3. Defensively, I know that some of the D linemen are banged up. I'm not sure how much they're going to play a guy like Kalevon Chasol. They don't rush the passer a lot in these situations anyway. Who might that give an opportunity to? Some of the young bucks that fans haven't seen a lot from yet in the front seven. Who are a couple of those guys for this Saturday?
Yeah, Gerald Cherry is really, I think, made some strides. Andre Anthony and, you know, names like that. They've been careful. They know what Chasson can do. I think, you know, especially with that sort of injury, that there's no sense in putting him in the contact, or for that matter, Divinity, which is interesting. I'm interested to see whether Divinity, and when they come back for fall camp, is playing inside or outside linebacker. But those are just two of the names, and there are a lot of edge people out there. But, of course, Stevens, number three, is, to me, the more and more I watch them, they like him inside the box. And so I've seen, the question to me was, okay, you got Delpit, you got Stevens, both of them safeties that are good around the football and can play downhill. I think that I've seen more of Delpit playing the center field role, and Stevens more of the nickel that's playing that other edge opposite to Chasson. So, again, I go back. I think we got some young pass rushers that are up and coming. But I think the you said who's going to be 1 and 2 for sacks for LSU. I would say Chasson and Stevens next year based off what I've seen.
We'll get you out of here on this one, Gordy, and I'll stretch your memory a little bit. Not just the early enrollee era, but going back before that, can you think of anyone like Derek Stingley Jr. that at this juncture was this advanced?
Yeah, Pat Peterson. You know, in terms of, I will say this, I think Stingley is more polished and more fundamentally sound technique-wise. Peterson was just a raw freak type of athlete. But, you know, Stingley's not far behind, I think, in athleticism. What jumps out at me is just how smooth he is, how technically sound he is. You know, his dad's done a wonderful job. He played football, and then obviously, you know, they've worked over with Ryan Clark over at Traction, who does a great job training DBs. But that'd be the best comparison for me, just that sort of impact that when Peterson showed up.
Anything special on tap for you this Saturday, LSU football spring game? You get to take it in or you got to work it?
No, I'm working it, so we'll be on the, you know, we'll be down on the sideline with Chris Blair and Doug Morrow. So that'll be available on LSUsports.net, I think, for the listeners over there. But no, it's just it's a full day, a little crawfish, and you know, it's always a tough game to call, right? Calling a glorified scrimmage is never easy. But I'll be out there playing golf Friday with Ruffin Rodriguez, who claims he has the highest rated segment in Lafayette Radio. I'm not sure who gave him those numbers, but he's at least claiming it.
Today's his birthday, right? So he gets to say whatever he wants.
Yeah, he does, but he said this last week, right? He texted me this last week when I was in Phoenix. So it's a kind of propaganda that I get pushed there weekly, you know, week in and week out.
No, look, that makes sense. And look, you mentioned crawfish, so I'll mention this to you on the way out. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. Billy Napier told us a week or two ago they had a huge coaches clinic. They were bringing, if I heard him correctly, they were bringing $9,000 worth of crawfish out to Cajun Field. Is that a lot of crawfish for you?
Yeah, that is a lot of crawfish. LSU did that also. They did that Saturday after their scrimmage. I mean, you know, it's obvious if you're a high school football coach, and I saw them, and there's a lot of guys that would put together that would be a pretty good semi-pro offensive line. Obviously, crawfish is a requirement because they love it. And I believe what Coach Napier said, no doubt.
That's the kind of insight we can't get anywhere else. Gordy, thanks for doing this. Have a great week.
Okay, Ben, take care.
Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter. And, yeah, that would be difficult. Please give us sideline updates. Give us behind-the-scenes info on the spring game. But tidbits like how much you're willing to spend, how many pounds of crawfish are in the stadium, that's important stuff. And that's why you have to go to Gordy for that type of info. Don't forget, Shea Dixon coming your way at 5:05. A little bit more slanted toward LSU football recruiting. And Jim Harris, executive director of the RCAF on the new plan implemented on July 1st. He's coming your way, Cajuns fans, at 5:45. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in with a question for you on 103.7 The Game.
Debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Kind of like a blind squirrel with the nut, if you will. Occasionally those liners get it right and lead us right to where we're heading. This would be one of those cases. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. It is time for a football debate. And on both sides of the basin, you just heard from Gordy Rush, a lot of LSU spring game preview talk. I want to get into some of the Cajun spring game action as well. This question, it's pointed at both the vermilion and white, the purple and gold. You could choose your pleasure.
Exciting and new.
Uh-oh, Clint. It's one of those open-ended sink or swim questions. For all of our social media giants, you might actually have to think on this one. Our apologies for that. Here's your sink or swim question of the day. Give us the player you're most looking forward to seeing in Saturday's spring game. LSU, UL, one, the other, or both? Just make sure to call 706-0111. Clint, I'm going to give you honors here. Let's start in the Hub City. Give me the player for Billy Napier this Saturday you're most excited to see.
I think I'm most excited to see, and it's going to sound like a cop-out answer as all get out, but I think Levi Lewis is the guy that I'm most looking forward to seeing simply because of the fact that I want to see if he's able to live up to the hype in this kind of situation in the spring game. Mind you won't see a whole heck of a lot of be very vanilla offensive game plan, but I want to see if he's going to be a little bit different than he had been in the past. I want to see if we see a Levi Lewis that's more prone to throwing the ball instead of running the ball a lot more frequently.
You almost hit me with the Johnny Jones-ism there. You want to see if we see.
Yeah.
You did a good job of doing an excellent job there.
Yes.
By the way, Johnny Jones' team made a heck of a run in the pay-for-play CTI tournament, beating the Warhawks a little while ago. You can always tie into sports, brother. Now, I'm with you on the Cajun side, and I don't think it's a cop-out answer because there's only competition at the quarterback position for one of these two programs, and it's UL. Jaive Magale, some of the others, Clifton McDowell, that are at UL, allegedly, pushing Levi Lewis a little bit. I think it's clear that he's taken the ropes and the reins of that job. Now, how does he look is another question. But unlike somebody, say, you know, Miles Brennan, for example, I'm not as worried about how he physically looks. I'm interested to see how he throws the football. I want to see the accuracy more than I need to see some of the arm strength. I believe in that from the former Scotlandville Magnet star. But I want to see Levi Lewis hang in the pocket, throw a timing route, and then do it again, and then do it a third time. Because far too often, Lewis anticipates the pocket is going to break down, and he takes off, maybe even in advance of when he needs to. So in a situation like the spring game, where you're not going to see exotic blitz packages, it would be nice to see Levi Lewis, the passer. So I'm with you, Clint. I think that is your lead answer. Something else to consider, imagining that you're not going to see much of Trey Regis, who's been down with a bit of a temporary knee injury. Who else is going to step up at running back? We know the options. We know that they were really good last year. But continuing to take a step forward for some of these RBs, that'll be a welcome sight in the spring game. For LSU, I'll go first. It's got to be Derek Stingley Jr., right? And I'll say it right now. We need to see him go against an offense led by Joe Burrow. Period. End of discussion. If that means it has to be ones on ones, fine. If that means that Stingley, like so many before him, has to play on the purple side, then switch unis, go to the white side, as far as the jerseys to be able to match up against the number ones, that's what I need to see. I need to see Burrow trying to get it to Jefferson, trying to get it to Chase, trying to get it to Marshall, and Stingley defending. That's what I want to see most on Saturday inside Tiger Stadium. There are a lot of other players that intrigue me. The offensive line, it's not sexy to watch, but kind of like Gordy was telling you there. We've been hearing it. Jamie Howard yesterday. They kind of all sing the same refrain at this point, and it's hard not to believe what's coming out of their mouths. That the offensive line looks legit. That they're healthy. They're more experienced. They're communicating better. And Gordy said it starts with the offensive tackles. Hey, that's great. And so if you see that in conjunction with the ball getting out of Burrow's hands quicker, that's step one this Saturday on April the 6th of feeling better about what's going to come the first Saturday in November. And I know that you don't want to hear about LSU-Bama, but it's been the biggest bugaboo game on the schedule, and for good reason. LSU hasn't won it in a while, but it typically goes down in similar fashion. Or at least the area where LSU struggles the most is to protect its quarterback. Quarterback gets out of rhythm. They leave too many guys in to protect, and Bama's five-star corners are always going to be good enough to man cover a two-receiver route pattern. And so I like what I hear from Gordy Rush there. It's a bit of the Saints' offensive passing game that's matriculated down to LSU with Joe Brady. Great. Tackles are experienced, healthy, protecting better, and the ball comes out quicker. All of those things are good. But I'll still tell you that Derek Stingley Jr. for me is the guy that I would most desire to watch on an island with some of LSU's best receivers. I'm going to let you go, and you can't pick Stingley.
Dang it, I was about to go that route as well. I'm not going to lie, because I think Stingley is just the fact he's got so much hype surrounding him heading into the spring game. I think it's easy to pick that one. But if you had to make me pick another one, I think Christian Fulton needs to be in consideration more about how much he's going to wind up participating in the spring game, recently returned from practice. So that's definitely a storyline that I'm keeping an eye on, just to see how much he plays in the spring game, and also how he looks coming off an ankle injury.
Agree, disagree. I agree that how much, I agree on that last part you said, especially if and when he's out there, how does he look?
Exactly.
Disagree on how much PT. and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I don't think how often he plays, or if he even really plays that much on Saturday, that's not going to be indicative of how healthy he is. We know that they'll go precaution.
Exactly. Like I said, it'll probably be more than no more than like five plays at the most, I think. It's just like how much does he feel like he's going to be out there for? I think that was the biggest thing, if at all.
Gordy gave you one there that I think is a good one too. Jarrell Cherry. He mentioned Andre Anthony kind of in the same breath, but who are the next pass rushers in line? And I got a chance on my way into work this morning to catch some of RP3, and I'll give you kind of a parallel principle because I'm with him. I don't know that going to get the Ferguson kid from La Tech is going to be the financial and draft equity prudent thing to do. I just don't know if all that stuff's going to fit into their future plans, if they mortgage too much in future drafts to get it done. But I'll agree in principle with what he's saying. You can't have too many good pass rushers on the interior and exterior of your line. You can't. At the NFL level, and kind of the point I'm making now, at the collegiate level. And so, if you can develop and bring along Jarrell Cherry, Andre Anthony, you couple them with Michael Divinity. Gordy said he's not sure if he plays inside or outside. I hope he's playing on the outside because that means that Patrick Queen and Micah Baskerville and some of the others are ready to roll. But the combination of Divinity, obviously, Chassaw, Stevens, as Gordy referred to there, coming down, the safety converted to kind of an outside linebacker, a little bit of that old school Craig Lawston type of move, Carnell Hatcher type of move. If they could get some of those guys down there and Jarrell Cherry comes along to go along with some more interior-based defensive linemen who will be healthy, you would think, come August, Braden Fajoco, Rashard Lawrence, that's best-case scenario. And kind of, I think to the point that Ray was making this morning, I'll echo it now about LSU instead of the Saints. Can't have too many guys who get after the quarterback, especially when you have a defensive mastermind that knows how to get it from check to checkmate, right? He could put you at his mercy with scheme alone. If you couple that with guys that have the physical capabilities and they've got some seasoning, look out. LSU will become the type of front seven threat that everyone's going to have a tough time with in the SEC and beyond. All right, let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, welcome to the party. Who do you most want to see on Saturday?
I agree with you, Derek Stingley, but I want to see if they put Jamar Chase against Derek Stingley instead of Jefferson, because from all what I'm hearing is Jamar Chase is the, you know, the thing this spring.
You know, here's how I'll respond to that, because I've been hearing similar things about Jamar. I think that he has the most NFL potential of any receiver on LSU's roster, but he's still got to climb the ladder a little bit to get to the reliability and productivity of Justin Jefferson. So hopefully that makes sense. I think Jefferson right now is the better route runner. He's more polished, but he doesn't have the freakish athleticism and potential that Jamar Chase does. If Chase unlocks that, Katie, bar the door.
I hear you, Ben. And for you, no, just kidding. I love your show, man. Keep it up.
That's the kind of thing that's going to get your friends to tell you you can't call into the show for a while. They're going to put you, not in concussion protocol, they're going to put you in timeout, nose in the corner. But I do want to see Levi Lewis. Can he help this offense take a step forward? Because without him, I think they're scrambling a little bit at the quarterback position. All right, we'll take our final break of hour number one. More time for you to weigh in on the other side. Spring game fever. It's sad that that exists, but it does right now. Basketball's over. The Masters is next week. Baseball, and it's a midweek swing. Let's talk some more about LSU and UL spring football. Dial us up in our next segment. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, bouncing right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
and live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. Another hour to go from inside the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing 237-7663. Shay Dixon coming aboard almost exactly 1 minute from right now. We got a lot of cruton to talk. We'll go in on LSU spring game. Jim Harris, executive director of the RCAF, will be with us to talk a new implementation, new levels, new recognition, ways that donors can cash in for Raging Cajun sporting events. That is coming at you at 5:45. But before any of that, how about a little bit of baseball talk? LSU taking on Grambling tonight. 6:30, first pitch at the box. 6 p.m., the pregame show begins on 103.7 The Game. Clay Moffitt's got the pill for Allen Dunn and LSU. As for the Houston Astros, mercifully got a win last night in Arlington. They're now 2-3. Hats off to Brad Peacock. 6 2/3 innings, gave up only 2 hits last night. And the Stros got a win 2-1. Tonight, they're looking to get back to .500. Continue their dominance over the Rangers, especially in Arlington. It'll be Justin Verlander, 1-0 in the season, had 9 punchouts in 7 innings in his first go at Tampa. Verlander going to take on former St. Louis Cardinal, Arizona Diamondback, Shelby Miller tonight. 6:30, the first pitch there. 7:05 is the first pitch, 6:30, Astro Launch. You can hear that one on KVOL The Rewind. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 AM in Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Charles. Baseball, hey, we love it. But football, that's when we need Shay Dixon.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shay Dixon of Go247.
He's here, ready to ride. First time in April. Shay, welcome back in on a Tuesday. How the heck goes it in the capital city?
Oh, everything's going perfect, Ben. It's a beautiful day here, taking in more spring football, and only a couple left because we've got a spring game coming up this weekend, which we'll touch on more in Flip the Script. I've got some questions for you.
It's like you have telepathy. We will be going there after the break, but right now the people want to know, I guess, just how much supernatural power you have when it comes to recruiting and predicting what comes next. So let's start with a visit that's coming very soon. How about Kendall Milton, the number 2 running back in the country from the state of California? He pleased LSU fans. He said he would on Twitter, but he pleased them when he announced he's coming in on a visit. Give us the dates. Give us the details. This seems pretty significant.
Yes, if you're going to get on Twitter as a recruit and tease something for the LSU fan base, you got to deliver, right? It's got to be more than a top 25. And he did just that. He's going to come in on April 15th. And this is big news. Let me kind of break it down for you with kind of the overlook or the thought process for LSU is, last year they signed the best running back class in America, and it can't be debated. They were the only team that signed 2 top 6 running backs. They signed the number 1 running back in 5-star John Emery out of Destrehan. They landed the number 6 running back in the country in Ty Davis out of Southern Lab. So you knew the guys, right, that they had to keep home, and they did it. They kept John Emery away from Georgia. They keep Tyrion Davis away from a number of teams. They sign them both. So we expect those guys to play a lot. But how do you follow that up, right? Like, who do you pitch to that next group of, hey, look, we just signed 2 of the best backs in America. Do you try to find these kind of plug-and-play guys, or do you go right back to the 5-stars? And they've done just that. And the top 2 running backs in the country are Zach Evans out of Houston, who they've had in camps and on campus a million times, and then a guy out west in California's 5-star Kendall Milton, who is who we're talking about. Now he's going to make that first visit. This is big, given that he's going to come in the off season, meaning he'll probably come back in the fall. He's not in a rush to make a decision, but he's going to give LSU a hard look this weekend. And it's a good thing for LSU because Milton is really good friends with Elias Ricks, super close friends with Elias Ricks out in California. Elias Ricks is obviously committed to LSU right now as the number 1 corner in the country. And then they've also got a commitment in from Jordan Berry, who plays out at Navarrete in California on the defensive line. So they're building towards a little bit of kind of unfamiliar, uncharted territory. I guess the last player out of California that signed with LSU is probably Hayden Reddick at quarterback, unless I'm missing someone kind of out of left field. But Reddick ultimately transferred to a number of different schools, and That didn't stick. So it seems like now we're going into a spot, Ben, where LSU is actually recruiting California, and it's kind of paying off.
And I got to dig a little deeper there on the left coast. And I'll say this, and maybe there's a correlation, maybe there's not. We continue our chat with Shea Dixon, go247.com. I remember in the last cycle, the last couple of cycles, really, LSU's been able to get in to Utah. And we talked about Bill Bush, his connection there. So fast forward to today, second day of April in 2019. How are they doing this in California, Shea? And are the two kind of West Coast vibe-ish? Are they related at all?
Yeah, well, they're doing it because of a number of things. One, I do think that, you know, getting to a New Year's Six Bowl and playing, you know, in the Fiesta and winning out west was something that these, you know, these kids could get an eye on. For instance, one of the state's top players and quarterback DJ Uiagalelei was at the practice with a bunch of kids down in Arizona to watch them, you know, I guess go through, I think it was two practices that they ended up seeing. But that was kind of after already visiting LSU, getting to see them out there and go through practice, I think was kind of jumped out to a lot of those kids. But you get Ricks on board, you get Barry on board, and you mentioned Bill Bush, he's got ties out west. Dave Aranda has ties out west, but Ed Orgeron was the head coach at USC. James Craig, the offensive line coach at LSU, was an O-line coach at USC. Tommy Robinson, the running backs coach and recruiting coordinator, was the running backs coach and recruiting coordinator at USC. So they've got a staff full of guys who've got connections out west, and then toss in that USC and UCLA kind of suck right now, right? Like, they're not all that great. USC has three total commitments, only one out of a deep California class. UCLA was hemorrhaging guys. They lose Brew McCoy at the end to Texas after he had already gone to UCLA. So things aren't looking rosy out there, and LSU's not the only school that's saying, hey, look, let's go try our hand out west. And given that LSU's got the ties I mentioned with the coaches and knowing a bunch of the high school coaches out there and the trainers, I think it's setting up well. I mean, if you've got Ricks in the board already, in the boat already as a five-star and top player in the state, you're looking like you might be the team to beat for Jaden Navarette and Tremaine Burton, a wide receiver and an athlete, both top 15 guys out in California. You just had Justin Flo, the number three overall player in the country, number two player in California, five-star linebacker on campus last weekend out of the Golden State. So I could just go down this list. There's no state beyond the ones right around the southeast, like Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, that have sent players on to LSU's campus like California has. So I'm not going to be shocked at all if they don't wind up signing two, three, four guys out of California, which you could never have convinced me that would have happened had I not seeing it play out right now.
Really a lot, Shea, that people could sink their teeth into there. Perhaps nothing as juicy as, I think you're intentional. I'm going to say it was intentional. It was, things aren't looking rosy, and you use that to refer to USC and UCLA, and of course, the tie-ins to the Rose Bowl are apparent. So thank you for that metaphor and the gift of it.
It's just built into the brain, my friend.
Yes, it is. All right, let's get now to my final recruiting question for you. The spring game, we know it's coming up. That means official visits. It didn't used to, but with this new structure, right, two different signing days, they've changed the way that they kind of roll here. OVs start earlier, and they'll keep going for a little bit. Give us a preview of who's coming in this weekend and who LSU fans can expect during this reintroduced and refreshed early OV period.
Right. Well, one big name, they'll get in Arik Gilbert, who is probably the best jumbo tight end prospect in the country. He's a five-star. Really one of those rare guys that you could play on the D-line, play at tight end. He's dominant anywhere. They'll get a bunch of kids in from Texas, but they're still sort of ironing out. I think this weekend we'll see them probably settle on somewhere between 6, 7, 8 official visitors, and that's a change of pace, and you mentioned it. But now that they split these signing days, like we get the one in December and then you get the normal one in February, it's sort of pushed like we've seen LSU. They get, you know, 19, 20, 21 signees in December, and you can only get 25 total. So if you're taking everyone then, most of those kids, a lot of the kids LSU signed, were playing in the playoffs and won state titles this year. I could go through a list of 6, 7 guys that they signed who won a state title. That means they were playing football all the way through November, into December. Then they're immediately signing. Then they're either done with recruiting or they're enrolling in college. And it's sort of, I guess what I'm saying is it pushes everyone's time frame of what you need to do up. And what you need to do is you've got to take unofficial visits, feel out where your offers are at, and then take your official visits. And because official visits used to only exist from September on. A lot of these kids were taking them right in December or January when I'm done with my football season. I know which offers I have. I'm ready to go see my colleges. Well, now your college wants you to sign in December. So they've opened up this spring period for official visits to happen. Last year was the first time they did it. Ed Orgeron and a lot of coaches said, look, I'm kind of wishy-washy on this. It kind of sucks when you have to get them to campus now, and then they don't decide until December, and you're not sure if you're getting them back to campus again before then, you know, if they're from California or somewhere like that. So in a way, it hamstrings you, but look, you're at the discretion of a kid who says, hey, I want to make my decision before my senior year. So you either take my visit now or you don't get one at all, and that's just kind of how recruiting goes. So I bet that they'll bring in 6, 7, 8 official visitors this weekend, and that means, you know, Thursday night, Friday when they get in, dinner with the staff, full tours. They'll be at the spring game. They'll be at the Crawfish Bowl afterwards. They'll have their family there, and it'll be that sort of three-day weekend that we're used to seeing, and it kind of makes you feel like you're right back in the recruiting process, though it doesn't really ever stop, but this is certainly kind of where it sparks up again.
He is Shea Dixon. Most people listening who know him well, they're interested in seeing the kids he just talked about at Tiger Stadium on Saturday. On the other side of this break, we'll talk about the kids that will be playing inside Tiger Stadium. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we shall proceed to flip the script on the other side on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we were?
Flip the script.
I flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shea Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip.
Hell of a time to take this baton from that man, Ed Orgeron. He talked us in. He's got a spring game this weekend. We're talking about that right now. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Shea, good to have you right back in. All right, you went to the sideline. You got a little water. You're ready to play quarterback now, so why don't you lead the segment? Let's talk some spring football.
Yes, I'm stepping off the field. It's your turn to get some reps here. I'm kind of excited about the spring game, and I know it's spring games, and I won't be excited afterwards probably because not a ton will happen, but I do think we'll see some things, and it's not an off season if we're not talking about the offense, right? But I think, you know, this will be your question. I think we're talking about the offense in a good way, right? That we've seen Joe Brady come on staff. He's implementing kind of a more RPO up-tempo look. Steve Ensminger is going to call the plays again. And, you know, by all accounts, it seems they get along very well. They've got a good rapport. And really, Ensminger, you know, is whatever works, he's going to try. And if it doesn't work, then he'll try, you know, whatever he knows does work. But I get the sense that, and I don't know if you think we're going to see anything big in the spring game that will tell us exactly what we're going to see in the fall, but at least in this spring game, do you think you'll get the feeling that, hey, this is the real deal now? And not that the offense last year was terrible. I know that they struggled with protection sometimes and some drops throughout the season, but overall they clicked at the end. And now I'm just wondering, are they taking that step? Is all this talk that we're hearing from Orgeron and the players different than when we heard it from Les Miles for 10 straight years?
I believe the answer to that question is yes. And I'm not blowing smoke. I don't do that on this program unless I believe it. I think you're going to take a couple of things away from the spring game. One, as opposed to this time last year, you're going to say, wow, the offensive line looks ready for prime time. You mentioned the protection issues, especially against teams like Auburn in the second half, Alabama basically the entire night. LSU is going to look solidified. They're going to look a little more veteran. If they're healthy, I think the offensive line is taking a big step forward. That, to me, should be obvious. Now, they're not going to have some behemoths rushing and breathing down their neck. I know that Caleb Van Chasson is back, but still, last year's group was probably a little more prolific getting after the passer. That's not something you always see in a spring game anyway, but you get my point. The offensive line, number one, will look better. Are you going to see a reinvention of LSU offense in this game this weekend? Probably not. I think you're going to see a more streamlined offense. I think you'll see better more effective, quicker communication. But don't forget this one big thing. And I'm excited about the Joe Brady influence. I am. More than I was Matt Canada, more than basically anything in a long time with LSU's offense. Do not forget the most important part. It's the continuity returning between quarterback and OC. Burrow, Ensminger. Haven't had that in basically a decade in Tigertown. So for me, just those two having a relationship. Ensminger, knowing what he likes. Burrow, taking control. And we've heard all spring long that he continues to be a leader of this team, that he's even getting physical when he gets chippy out there. He'll stick his neck in. All of those things, I think, are very, very important. The Joe Brady impact may not be as apparent until the Texas game, week two of LSU season. But I continue to hear, we had Gordy Rush on earlier today, Shay, that they are doing some Saints-like things. It's not complicated, but Brady helped to mold the way the Saints looked under Sean Payton when they had Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara these last few years. I think some of those principles are being implemented. You might see some of them in the spring game. You'll see a lot of them come Austin week two in September.
You mentioned the quarter. I mean, you mentioned Burrow, and you look at Brennan. Is this a time for LSU fans to pinch themselves and say, not only is this new offense probably real, but maybe for the first time, as you said, with an OC quarterback, that you're going quarterback that you feel good about? And I think maybe a lot had to do with Miles Brennan redshirting, still only being a sophomore, knowing that he's healthy now. I don't think anyone doubts that he's a really good quarterback, and I think that the time that Burrow's bought him, who Burrow is obviously a great quarterback in my mind, just what LSU needs. But this transition is something that's finally real. I mean, for the first time in a while, right, Ben, that you're not kind of in deep water wondering who's transferring in or which guy is going to step out of kind of a relevancy to be your starter.
This is very important. So I guess process this the way that it's intended. For the first time in what feels like forever, you don't have a BS quarterback competition where you're not sure that any of the options are really going to be SEC championship type caliber. Because be honest, Jay, and you know this, you've been covering this program for a while now. When they trot out Jennings and Harris, when they trot out basically, I mean, everybody that we've seen these competitions, nobody's been confident that any of the guys who might win are actually going to be upper echelon in the SEC or could lead the offense to be that. I think there's some confidence that Burrow, who went through it last year, we know how much better quarterbacks get year one to year two as a starter. The continuity, as we've been talking about with Ensminger. But the beautiful part of this spring is nobody's worried about, is Miles Brennan potentially going to be the starting quarterback? He's improving in his role as the backup. LSU football has not had that luxury in a while. You could say maybe the last time was Brandon Harris as the starter, Danny Etling as the backup. All that changed basically three-quarters of the way through the Wisconsin game in Lambeau that year. So that's what's beautiful about this situation, Shay. Burrow and Brennan are both taking steps forward. Their roles are defined. People trust Burrow. It's not kind of a BS competition for the sake of saying we got competition. No, to hell with that. You got a starter. He's pretty darn good, and he likes to walk it and talk it. Everything else from there to me, it's gravy, brother.
When you look at kind of this team with no Devin White, what is your reaction or kind of gut feel on Patrick Queen, who was a really great football and baseball player in high school, definitely a good athlete. But for my two cents, when he got in the game last year, and Devin White got suspended, obviously, for the first half of Alabama, Patrick Queen played a lot throughout the year. I thought he looked good, and you're not going to replace a 100-plus tackle guy in back-to-back seasons like that, but I feel like LSU's had a nice run at middle linebacker where I'm not overly worried about the future of Patrick Queen, who I think could be, you know, having a guy who has a big spring game. You know, they'll have him out there a ton.
I feel pretty good about Patrick Queen. I guess I would say at this point he's a better option than Micah Baskerville, but he's still light years from catching not only Devin White's status, but, you know, Kevin Minter and so many of the guys – Kelvin Shepard, who have played in the middle recently for the purple and gold. Still, he's got a great supporting cast, right? I mean, basically the entire D-line that comes back, Donnie Alexander, the return of Caleb Von Chassaw. He's got so much help that I feel good about what he'll be asked to do and his ability to execute there. So, yeah, maybe he has a big game on Saturday, but I feel pretty comfortable with him not being asked to do Devin White things, but maybe producing to, say, 75, 80% of that capacity.
Is there anything I'm missing? Anything else you're looking forward to this weekend beyond the offense and obviously some players that you kind of want to get an eye on?
Yeah, look, I would say two things. The pass catchers and the guys that are guarding them. I want to see if Justin Jefferson's going to be challenged by some of those young bucks that are probably more talented. They definitely came in with more hype, but I'm not sure that they're as good of football players. I'm not sure they're as good of route runners as Justin Jefferson. So we know what number two can do. I want to see next Ja'Marr Chase, Terrace Marshall, some of these other guys. Can they push him a little bit? Because competition there is only going to breed better things for that receiving core. And they're also playing with a quarterback they've gained continuity with. The second thing is the DBs, Derek Stingley Jr. He's a freak. We're not going to see a lot of his special teams ability, I would think, in a spring game. But let's see him cover one-on-one. I want to see him tested down the field. I need to see some first-team offense versus first-team defense. Even if they've got to switch jersey colors for Stingley to be matched up against the Joe Burrow thrown pass, I need to see that on Saturday. And I think that would probably go a long way to making people realize, okay, the kid is beyond just hyped. He's legit right now, as everyone internally in that bubble keeps telling us that he is.
I'm excited, Ben. This geared me up. We've got the recruiting down packed. We've got the team down packed. And by the time we talk next week, we won't have any more football at LSU, I guess, until fall camp. We'll pick up rumblings over the summer, but outside of that, we're gonna have to find some ways to flip the script, my friend.
Oh, I think we'll find some things. LSU, the state of Louisiana, never boring. Shay, this segment never boring either. You know we appreciate the time. Enjoy your week.
Sounds good, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
There you have it. Shay Dixon, go247.com. That is how we do it on a Tuesday. As we hit a break, hey, we got to remind you, you need to take the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge. Hey, do it for your own good, because if you win, you're going to get a $100 gift card to golfballs.com. The Masters starts a week from Thursday, so the time is dwindling, and it's really easy to sign up. Just go to 1037thegame.com, sign up, pick the golfer you think will win the 2019 Masters. If the winning golfer selected by more than one entry, we will put all correct entries in a raffle and select a winner. The 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge, and you can only enter at 1037thegame.com. Let's return, throw a little bit of shade, shall we? And then an interview talking Raging Cajun's Athletic Foundation and some changes made there. Jim Harris, the executive director, with us at 5:45. You're listening to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Your NBC Sports Radio update starts now.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Nothing strange about it. Really nothing strange at all. That's exactly how we do it every Tuesday. Tip of the cap to our man Shay Dixon. Doubly blessed, right? We get the recruiting intel, LSU making waves in California, and then some insight, at least if that's what you consider everything I said, on the spring game. Bumper to Bumper Sports right back in on 1037 The Game. We're taking your phone calls as well, kind of sandwiched in between interviews. We'll have Jim Harris of the Raging Cajuns Athletic Foundation aboard to end today's program. You want to chime in now? We've got time. 706-0111. But, CD, while we wait, you can tell I'm already taking a lot of pleasure in this. We got to throw some shade. Our friends at Patio Center, heck, they demand it. And on a day like today, oh, you know, it doesn't take a lot to wind me up and get me rolling. So here's your daily reminder that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their management top down. It starts with Mark. You'll sit down, create a vision, and then they'll fulfill it, making sure you have the best, baddest patio on the block coming down the stretch of 2019. So up your patio game with a quick trip to Patio Center. .com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
I almost don't even have to say a word. In fact, Clint, before I say really another, or you get your 2 cents in, let's let Hank Hill maybe play fullback and lead the way as any good Texan would.
Loser! You're a loser!
And that's exactly what the AAF, whatever the hell it is that stands for. Okay, you're sliding me a note here. Yes, sure, I guess. The Alliance of American Football. My man, I'm not telling you they're dead, but they're on life support, and they may not have the medicine needed to resuscitate that league. In the first season of operations, the AAF has suspended football operations. I will suggest that if what you do is produce a football league, if you're suspending football operations, you're probably not very solvent. You're probably not going to stick. It's as if I could have seen this coming, CD, and here I go on the high horse. I better get off of it because I've been known to fall off that horse from time to time.
Yeah, exactly, Ben. And I have to agree with you. It definitely feels like it's pretty much dead as disco right now because we're just seeing the AAF implode upon itself. A lot of it has to do with that new owner wanting to kind of take business in his own hands.
They were reliant on the NFL to help get them plugged in, so that they could pick up some of their players, right? Hey, NFLPA, do a brother a solid. And the NFL never wanted to have another feeder system. So just some of the worst planning that you could ever imagine. If only we could have seen this coming. A minor league football operation. Hey, I applaud the chutzpah. I absolutely take like a jousting sword and just rip it through your solar plexus when it comes to the foresight and some of the things that it would have taken to keep this league rolling. So thanks for giving everybody Zach Mettenberger and Johnny Football in their life for a couple of weeks. Enjoy going out to pasture with Old Yeller.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
It's a weird face that you're making, and I'm going to set the stage here because we got to hit a break in a minute. But inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, Clint is trying not to laugh because I know he was a fan of this league. But you're trying not to realize just how much of a crap sandwich it's been.
Oh, exactly. It kind of has been, especially after the first week. You weren't able to pay your players. I think that was a bad sign from the jump. But then, like on the bright side, we're going to try it one more time with the XFL in 2020. And then maybe, just maybe, things will be better.
Look, if your players are having to leave in their Lambos or whatever they got every Friday to make sure they're the first to get their check cash so that it actually will clear, that's not good for any football league. We got Jim Harris coming aboard next. Big moves today with the RCAF. He'll explain them. And don't forget, at straight up 6 o'clock, the pregame show, LSU Grambling Baseball, 6:30 first pitch from the box. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We always think outside the box on 103.7 The Game.
This is Raging Cajun football coach Billy Napier. And
let's go! Let's go, baby!
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Back in for the final time, you're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Busy program so far on a Tuesday. Some good business being done right now, I believe, by the RCAF. And, we got to get ahead of things. We got to inform you. We got to answer some of the questions, undoubtedly, that you will have, Raging Cajun Nation. To do that, let's get out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Great honor to bring back in Jim Harris. He is the Executive Director of the Raging Cajuns Athletic Foundation. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great, Ben. How you doing? I appreciate you having me on.
You know we love doing it here on our program, and let's get to what you all have implemented just today, really. It's a new RCAF investment model, and what was some of the thought process behind not necessarily changing, but revamping what you all have been doing?
Yeah, we wanted to give the investors of RCAF a little bit more control over, you know, not only where their money goes, but the benefits that they receive for that. We've really been emphasizing the RCAF annual fund in the last 2 years, and that was really driven by the need of the athletic department to grow its operational revenues as much as possible, and that's still obviously a great priority for us. But, you know, as we kind of looked around the country and looked at the changing landscape of college athletics and just really evaluated us compared to some of our peers, we decided to move to this model, which really gives the investor more control over their experience. And they do that by them deciding where they want their money to go and us weighing equally those investments, no matter what area that they choose to direct their money towards. We will weigh that equally, and their credit will start to stack up, you know, across the board for all contributions and all investments through all areas. So it's really giving the investor a little bit more control and recognition for, you know, holistically what they're doing for our organization.
Before we get to the recognition and what comes, I guess, from some of the different investment levels, are we just talking about by different sport when you mean control and the transparency that you all are giving as to where your money is going? Is it just as simple as saying that, or are there different qualifiers than just by sport?
No, that's part of it. You know, obviously the annual fund is still an emphasis of ours, and the annual fund will still drive a lot of benefits. So, you know, for parking for football, tailgating, things like that, you know, there's an annual fund minimum requirement to be able to do some of those things. And that's obviously something that's very standard in our industry, you know, across the country. But really, to your point, you know, if someone chooses to give their money to baseball or chooses to give it to, you know, soccer or men's golf or wherever they would like that to go, we will weigh that investment the same as if they were doing it to the annual fund and for recognition purposes. So, you know, whether it be a sport or whether it be the annual fund or whether they, you know, all of the people that gave to help us construct the baseball stadium, so we would call that a facility enhancement. There's endowments. There's all types of ways to make a contribution or make an investment to the RCAF. And again, we're just kind of streamlining those investments and weighing them all equally for both recognition and benefit purposes.
He is Jim Harris, the executive director of the Ragin' Cajuns Athletic Foundation. Good enough to give us some time today on 103.7 The Game. Now, Jim, let's get to the recognition part. As far as how some of the new point calculation goes, I won't get you to go down the rabbit hole of every, you know, possible mm-hmm. option or detail, but how might that change the experience and some of the benefits for people that do invest?
So, you know, we give an example. There's a video that's out now on social media, and if you watch that video, it's about 5 minutes long, so it's a little lengthy, but it really does encapture everything we're doing with this investment model, and I encourage everyone to watch that. But in that video, we give a real-life example of someone that, you know, for example, might give $250 to the RCAF Annual Fund, but they give, you know, several hundred to the Diamond Club and several hundred for their personal seat donations to sit at a certain area at our football stadium or baseball stadium. You know, they may give a gift to women's basketball or wherever it may be. Well, in the old model, we would recognize them as a $250 donor because we were only recognizing annual fund levels. Where in this model, called total investment, we're adding up all those contributions amongst all those areas and coming up with a true total investment number, and then you will be ranked by your level of total investment. So there'll be 14 levels all the way from $50, which is our entry level, up to over $100,000, where we've got several people in the community or companies in the community doing more than $100,000 a year to RCAF. So from the top to the bottom, there's 14 total levels. Your total investment decides what level you're in, and then your priority point total decides where you get ranked within that level, and thus how you affect your benefits. We would call that your rank, and then your rank affects what benefits you receive and so on like that.
Jim, I'll let you get ahead of this question that inevitably you will get from our fans listening. If they've been donating between 2009 and current day, and I should make this point, this new policy will be implemented for the 2019-2020 fiscal year. So for the 10 years prior, people that donated, is there any, I guess, going backwards and getting credit for that?
Absolutely. So, you know, we've had a priority point system that we put in place in the end of 2015, beginning of 2016 calendar year. And that priority point system has been in place since then. So all of the points that have been accumulated by those individuals that have been in, you know, before this point, those points will stay on their records. They don't go away. They actually carry forward. And in fact, we're actually giving a 10-point bonus for every year that someone has been involved in RCF between 2009 and 2019. So to your point, you're correct. This model actually starts in full July 1 of 2019 going through June 30th of 2020, which is the university fiscal year. So we're rolling it out now to educate, you know, individuals prior to that July 1 start date. But they will get credit for everything that they've done in the past 10 years of RCIF. And like I said, in fact, they will get a 10-point bonus for every year that they've been donating or contributing to any area of RCIF over those 10 years. For each year they did it, they'll get a 10-point bonus. And we'll throw that onto their priority point total and carry that forward into this new fiscal year.
Another few moments with Jim Harris with the RCIF. He is the executive director. And there have been so many things that you've either, I guess, overseen or they were happening and getting finalized when you arrived here in Cajun country, Jim, Lampson Park, Teague Moore. And I forgot about one until I saw the release today. If you could, share a little bit of insight into what's happened with this $1.5 million investment in the nutrition program, because we know that's something that benefits all the sports.
Yeah, that was something that was a big initiative of our RCIF board of directors a few years back when, you know, we brought in all of this money in the annual fund, and we had record growth in our annual fund. And this goes back, honestly, when Scott Farmer was still here, and the board, you know, would provide input on where they wanted some of this money to be directed that was brought in through the annual fund, not just to offset expenses in the athletic department's budget, but how can we grow? You know, what areas can we invest in to grow? And one of those key areas was the nutrition program. And so the RCIF board voted to put some of the annual fund revenues into this nutrition program. And then really, to be honest, when Brian Maggard came on as athletic director, that program really blew up. And so there's been a renewed investment into that area in total nutrition and snacks that we can provide for our student athletes that are allowable by the NCAA and staff and all of those areas. And really that's grown to almost a $1.5 million investment now. That's not all RCAF revenues that's going to pay for that. That's some athletic department revenues that are put into that as well. But just it's grown from a $100,000 investment just 3 years ago up to $1.5 million 3 years later. It's pretty impressive.
As we wrap up, Jim, and you've mentioned Dr. Brian Maggard a few times, I love having him on this show because, look, he gets it from fans all the time. Here's what we want to see. Here's what we'd love to see improved. I'll ask you really that same question. And as somebody who harnesses a major fundraising arm to accomplish some of that, what's the feedback you get about what should happen next, what the fans want, and then some of the things you all are doing to accommodate?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously, you know, Brian was, when he first got here, he stated the goal very simply. We wanted to compete for and win championships. I mean, at the end of the day, if we wanted to define athletic department, we wanted to define our employees, we define our coaches and our student athletes, what does it mean to be a Cajun? We wanted to compete for and win championships and go to all the measures to get that accomplished. And we want our fan base to resonate that as well. Obviously, our fans want that same thing, but that sometimes takes an investment. And you see, you know, you look at our peers, you look what Arkansas State's done with their football stadium in the last few years. You look at what South Alabama's doing right now and building a new football stadium. You know, a lot of times athletic departments lead with a football program because selling football tickets and generating revenue through that, you know, can percolate throughout the whole department. It benefits all of our other sports when a sport like football does well in an athletic department. And so, you know, I think it's important for our fans to, you know, buy into this investment concept. We've got a lot of excitement around that program right now with Billy Napier and some of the things he's doing in the recruiting class that was just brought in. So you know, I think, you know, that investment, it's a good time for us to reward our investors to RCAF for their holistic contributions. It's a good time to make this tweak in our model so that the fans have more direct control over their rank and thus their experience that they get with Raging Cajuns Athletics. And, you know, I think a lot of credit for that vision does go to Dr. Brian Maggard and you know, the whole team here in athletics for kind of putting the structure in place. Like you talked about, the nutrition, and we've done full cost of attendance for our student athletes. We've enhanced recruiting budgets for our sports. Obviously, these facilities that we're talking about that have already been completed and a few more that are on the horizon. So all of that plays into this championship mindset that we're striving for. And you know, hopefully this investment model lines up with that mindset and gives, you know, the investors of RCIF the opportunity to do it their way and to get out of it what they want to get out of it.
You led me to an interesting thought. So a bonus question for you, and I know that this is an overly simplistic way of asking it, Jim, but how has the experience been so far selling Billy Napier?
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, Billy Napier really doesn't need a whole lot of selling. He sells it himself. You know, he's really good when we take him to speak to groups. And you know, the success speaks for itself. To be honest with you, I don't think all of us quite expected, you know, such an impact in year one. That's not always seen when a new head coach takes over a football program. Sometimes there's a little bit of a, you know, a period to get his system, you know, implemented and his athletes put in the right place and things like that. But I think we saw from the first year here that we were going to be competitive and we were going to win under Billy Napier. And that really starts to, you know, that excitement starts to snowball a little bit. And obviously winning our half of the Sun Belt and playing for the conference championship game in year one was very exciting. And then you throw the recruiting class on this past offseason, where I believe we were the number six recruiting class in the group of five. You know, that says something. That's pretty impressive. And so, you know, you get those players into our system and get them in our nutrition program and get them in our strength and conditioning program. And, you know, I think the excitement around our football program, you know, you're going to see that growth every year and really that competitiveness every year start to increase. And, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot for us to sell him. I think he and his program sells itself.
Jim, well said. You know, we appreciate the time. A lot of business to discuss today. You acquitted yourself well, my friend. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Our thanks again to Jim Harris. Love to do our best to keep everyone up to date with what's happening locally with the Raging Cajuns and some pretty big opportunities there for people already investing, those thinking about getting in to the RCAF. Again, thanks to Jim Harris. Thanks to all of our guests today. I cannot believe 2 hours has already come and gone. CD, let's see here. Looking at the old timepiece. Yeah, it's time for us to get the heck out of Dodge. Just about 6 o'clock. Thanks again to Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter. We got the insight into what's been happening, LSU's offense, some of the up-and-comers on defense, and obviously previewing this Saturday spring game. We did that with Gordy in the 4 o'clock hour. Shay Dixon, go247.com with us, as he always is, 5 to 5:30. Even found some time to flip the script. And then Jim Harris with the Raging Cajun Athletic Foundation, good enough to join us here to end the program. If you missed any, all, just portions of those interviews, we've got them for you. You can go to 1037thegame.com as well as the free mobile app. Just click or tap on demand. Listen to Acadiana Sports Station on the go. And here we go to LSU baseball. First of two midweek games for the Tigers. They're at the box tonight, and it's time to see just how far that Clay Moffitt can extend. Maneri needs some innings tonight from the son of LSU football strength and conditioning coordinator. So enjoy the ball game tonight. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. You've been listening to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.